Okay, the shiur is dedicated Le'ilui Nishmas Rachel Leah Bas Reb Chaim Tzvi. Okay, let's go to the text of the Goyin, the Asara Klolim. Last week we did the first few lines. This week we're going a little bit further. Klal Gol Batera, beginning from the it's the third line. Shekol Ma Shedibu Hamakabolim V'Chol Atera Kula Hakol Be'Otzoni Is Borach. Once again, as we spoke about last week, the Goyin here is making the distinction between a Kadosh Baruch Hu in and of himself and Kadosh Baruch Hu and the Rosh of Kadosh Baruch Hu as he reveals himself to us. And we spoke at length about that last week. So now we're going to continue. I'm on line 5. V'af gam ritzoinei hu be'elkoi. Kadosh Baruch Hu's Ratzon is also, I guess, commensurate with the Kadosh Baruch Hu himself, meaning, K'moy Shehu Bilti Tachlis, just like a Kadosh Baruch Hu is infinite, Kein Ratzonehu Gam Kein Bilti Tachlis. So Kadosh Baruch Hu's Ratzon is also infinite. Infinite in what sense? Says the Gor, this is now in line 6, at the very end, L'seis HaTov Bili Tachlis, Kadosh Baruch Hu's Ratzon, his will is infinite, and therefore he's capable of giving an infinite amount of goodness. So therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as he created the world, should have created the world, literally drowning and bestowing upon the world his infinite goodness. Ach ola b'otzoyni la'sois b'riyais b'alei tachlis. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu willed, ola b'otzoyni, thought of creating creations who were b'alei tachlis, who were finite, uvalei gvul. Right, possessing finite qualities. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to create man who would be possessed of free will. And therefore, man, as a result of his free will, would choose HaKadosh Baruch Hu's goodwill. And as a result of choosing HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will, choosing to do God's will, then they would be merit HaKadosh Baruch Hu's schar, his reward, which is also concerning Yisbarach HaTov, also God's goodwill to reward man. Okay, so now says the Gra, V'miyah HaTov b'li gavul, but if we leave HaKadosh Baruch Hu's rotzen at infinity, in other words, if his goodness, his bestowal of goodness, is of infinite magnitude, v'tzachlis, v'mkein ha'yagam, even if man does not choose to do God's goodwill, that which is good, that which is deemed to be divinely good, then in fact everybody will be rewarded, and therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu's covered his honor as a ruler would not be recognizable, because every person would automatically be recipient of his goodness. But the purpose of the creation of the world, li'galos kavod malchusai, is to reveal the honor of God's dominion. Ki'inyan, as it says in the pasuk in Yeshayahu, kol hanikra b'shmi. In other words, God's will is infinite, and if he would reveal to man his infinite goodness, his will to do good, then in fact man's free will would in fact actually not be significant, and therefore we would not be able to relate, we would not be able to look upon God as being the ruler of the world, meaning that God is able to fed out either schar and oynish, in other words, either reward or punishment. Lechach, therefore, says the Gra, Hutzrach letzamtzem es ritzoinoi. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was forced to contract his ratzon, contract his will, hatoiv, his will to do good. Shijihei bigvul v'sachlis. So therefore, Kadosh Baruch Hu would proportion out, right, goodness in finite magnitude. V'hu reishis mitziusai ha'edek etzai yisboach. Therefore, the first beginning of creation of revelation is a lack of God, a limitation of God's will, of God's ratzon. V'hu soid hatzimtzum, says the Goyin, this contraction of God's will, this is the idea, the soid hatzimtzum, the idea of tzimtzum. Shetzimtzim es ratzoni is barach. Hakadosh Baruch Hu contracted his will. B'chdei sheyeh efshar levruim, so that his creations would be able lekabel ratzoni hatoiv, to receive the goodness of his will. Af sheheim bali gvul v'tachlis, even though they are finite in magnitude. Goes on the Gra. I'm now on line 17. Believe it or not, we're going to actually finish the first perek, but don't keep your hopes up. V'zehat simtzum harishon nikra b'shem atik. Says the Gra, this first simtzum, we'll see that the Gra is going to speak about that this is the first of several simtzumim. This first simtzum is called by the word, by the expression atik. Atik is an expression from the Zayah. We will speak about this at another time. But why is it called atik? Says the Gra, Hainush atik yesh bo shnei perushim. There are two meanings to the word atik. Echad miloshen zoken. Atik means an older person. Shatil gumbay, the Aramaic translation of the word zoken as appears in the Torah, is atik. Vasheni miloshen vayatek. Atik also comes from the verb vayatek, that's in Lashon HaKodesh, v'hu Lashon Siluk. And vayatek means to displace, to relocate, to displace. V'hainu goes on the going and now elaborates upon these two meanings. Sha'azokin hu mimei kedem v'yeseh kodem mikol. That the word atik, when it means zokin, an elderly person, means it's the first, ha'yeseh kodem. The very first one. Hu atzimtzum hazeh. In other words, this is the symptom, the first of all tzimtzumim, and therefore it's called atik. V'lachein nikra b'shem atik. At the very last word on line 20. V'gam machma shezeh atzimtzum hu asiluk. But since this symptom is in fact actually a siluk, a relocation, a displacement. Hu gam kein sibas kriyas shmoy atik. It's also called atik, from the Lashon of Vayatek. But since, says the guy, since there are other tzimtzumim, are we fine? Since there are other tzimtzumim after this first tzimtzum, and it's called the atiks of all atiks, atik tatikin, and says the guy, understand. So let's try to understand what the guy is saying. Okay. First of all, we're going to focus on the concept of tzimtzum in according to the Goyim, Allah Goyim, Alibad the Goyim. And before we even speak about the Goyim's concept of tzimtzum, because there are several ideas here which the Goyim has put together, what is tzimtzum? Who first coined the term tzimtzum? So the first time that tzimtzum appears in Jewish intellectual history is, of course, in the Ari, in the Eitz Chaim. Now, actually, I think in the Maram Mekoymes, I was a little bit derelict in citing the Eitz Chaim. But in any case, so for that reason, I'm going to read to you from the Eitz Chaim. The Eitz Chaim is on Daf Yud Aleph Amud Gimel, and continues to Yud Aleph Amud Dalet. Since the Eitz Chaim has two columns, I'm noting it Amud Aleph, Amud Beis, Amud Gimel, and Amud Dalet. Says the Goyim, says the Ari, Reb Chaim Vital, who's writing in the name of the Ari. Da, one should know. Ki terem shenetzlu hanetzalim, v'nivu hanivroyim, before anything was created, hayaor elyon pashut, the divine light was pashut, was plain, simple, irreducible. Mamalik kol hametzias, constituted all of reality, all of existence. V'lo hayashum mokoyim ponoy b'pchidas avirekani. There was nothing that was vacuous from this irreducible divine light. V'chalol. El ha'kol hum mamuli min ha'or. Everything was filled up with the light, ein sof, of the infinite light, divine light. Pashut, the simple, divine, irreducible, divine light. V'hoya lo b'chinas roish. There wasn't a beginning. Lo b'chinas sof, not an end. El ha'kol hayor echad pashut. Shove. This or was simple, plain, unitary. Shove equal bashva achat. Equal in every way. This is called the infinite light, divine light. Goes on the Ari. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu thought decided to create the world. Once again, the Ari is going to now create the world to make creations and to express the completion of his acts for Shemosov and of his names. The Ari says this is the reason for the world to be created, as we spoke about last week. Kosh contracted himself. Now in the Ari, the contraction is from the middle of the circle outward. So Kosh contracts himself from the middle to the perimeter of a circle. So you don't have the Ari in front of you, but if you look at the Ari, you'll see a circle with a dot inside, which is the geometrical description of the concept of Tzimtzum. Okay, are we fine? Okay. So he says, "A symptom is atzmai einzib the kudem tzayis is shabeemta orim mamish v'nisrachek el tzodis yivois an the kudem tzayis." So Kodesh Baruch Hu's infinite light emerges to the perimeter of the circle. So we have a circle which is empty. V'az nisham makom ponoi. So we have a place which is empty. V'ave v'chalol rekani, a vacuous space. And says the Ari, the symptom was bashva achad, it was equal in all directions of the circle, and that's why it's called the circle. And this is the concept of symptom of the Ari, etc., etc. Now, what has the Ari done? Among other things, the Ari has basically made a tremendous revolution, a radical change in paradigm in the way we think about the world, namely that. Up until the Ari, the creation of the world, according to most Rishonim, which was Briya Yesh B'Ayin, creation ex nihilo, the conceptual notion or aspect of creation was going from non-being to being. Creation ex nihilo means from Ayin to Yesh. So in other words, all the Rishonim, in a certain way, in other words, we're faced with the issue of how does one go from non-being to being? As a result of this, the challenge of Western philosophy, Aristotelian philosophy, was that Western philosophy denied the possibility of something which is called non-being, because science understands that one does not go from nothing to something, but rather there's just a transformation from one state to another state. But in other words, what characterized conceptually the creation of the world for all the Rishonim was in fact that Kodesh Baruch Hu was able to create a world of being from non-being. From the Ari, it's almost as if creation is exactly the other side of the coin. Namely, how do we go from an infinite light, super being, to a finite world? In other words, whereas for the Rishonim, creation was an explosion of being from non-being, according to Ari, creation is a contraction from infinite super being to finite being. Now, as I mentioned before, this completely changes the rules of the game. Because for the Rishonim, the challenge was understanding that there's a notion of non-being, for which the challenge of science was that science does not recognize the notion of non-being, and therefore the various eternal theories of the universe were all ways in which the concept of non-being was denied. This is the medieval Jewish philosophy of the Rishonim. For the reason exactly the opposite. How do we get around the fact that everything ultimately a priori is God, and now there's room for man, there's room for creation? In other words, how do we krach sarayin? How does the world able to find itself in what is an infinite divine light which fills up all of reality and would not permit any notion of finitude to encroach upon its territory. Now, we see in the Goyin, in the first perek, there are three principles to the Shita of the Goyin of Tzimtzum. Principle number one is that for the Goyin, the whole process of Tzimtzum takes place in the Ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's what the Goyin says. The Goyin says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was B'tzamtzem his Ratzon, meaning, based upon what we spoke about last week, where we distinguished, we created a dichotomy between God in and of himself, the essence, the body of God, and God as he reveals himself to the world, the Ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So therefore, for the going, Tzimtzum, Chas V'Shalom, God forbid, is not a literal contraction of God's essence himself, but rather, Tzimtzum is in the Ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu contracts his infinite Ratzon in order to apportion goodness to create, to his creation, in accordance with the concept of free will. So in other words, the Goyin understands that the notion of Tzimtzum is a notion, a concept in the Ratzon and not in the HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. Okay, that's principle number one in the Gra. Principle number one, two in the Gra. Tzimtzum is a displacement, a relocation. Tzimtzum is not a hiding. Tzimtzum is not a cover-up. It's not an illusion. It's a literal displacement. The Goyin says that Tzimtzum is referred to as Atik from the word of Vayatek and is Lashon Siluk. The Goyin actually uses the term Siluk twice. Tzimtzum is literal. God literally displaces his Ratzon for one point to another point. So therefore, the second principle of the Goyin is Tzimtzum is a literal concept. Of course, it's not a literal concept in the essence of God, but nonetheless, so far as the Ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch is concerned, it's literal. That's the second principle. The third principle for the Goyin is the purpose of Tzimtzum. The purpose of Tzimtzum is to create the possibility that man can exercise a meaningful free will in order to choose God's will. That's the purpose of Tzimtzum. That's the purpose of the creation of the world, in a certain sense. Because through choosing God's free will, by using his free will to choose God's will, then man will ultimately be rewarded. By refusing, as a result of his free will, man refuses to do God's will, man is punished, and consequently, God's reward of those who choose to do his will, and punishment of those who do not choose to do his free will, HaKadosh Baruch Hu displays his power of dominion, his royal status over the world. That's called Kavod Malchusai. And that's the purpose of the Tzimtzum, that's the raison d'etre for the Tzimtzum, the tachlis of the Tzimtzum, and that is the tachlis of the world. Okay, so these are the three principles of the Goyin. Now, let's see where the other Mephoshim sit according to the three principles. So, of course, we're going to begin with the Ramchal, because the Ramchal is really the first major interpreter of the Ari in these issues. In terms of the location of Tzimtzum, which is the first principle of the Gra, as being in the Ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Ramchal completely concurs with this concept. In the Das Tevudos, in the Rabbi Friedlander edition, which is Daf Resh Memches, in the Klolim Rishonim Klal Beis, says the Ramchal, HaTzimtzum Hu Ma Sha'odin Baruch Hu, Kovish Kivayachol Chay Tuvay, Bebrias Devoy, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Tzimtzum is that which HaKadosh Baruch Hu held back, Chay Tuvay, his ability to do good to his creations, Shaloi Lasoisam Shleinim Afilafer Elkam, to not make them Shalei, Kol Shaken Shaloi Asom Lefi Elkam, and certainly not to make the Brias in accordance with the magnitude of God. Now, what does this mean? So, in fact, in the Klach Pischei Chochmah, in other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu held himself back from making his creatures shalem, which means, like the Goyin, bestowing goodness upon them. However, if you would like the exact Lashon, in the Klach Pischei Chochmah of the Ramchal, Pesach Chav Dalet, right, says the Ramchal, Be'inyan Hamshachas Apur Lachus V'menu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu now reveals himself to the world, acts to the world, HaKadosh Baruch Hu leaves his infinite magnitude, decides to act in a finite manner, and in the Reb Chaim Friedlander edition, on Daf Nun Tes, Chelek Aleph, Be'inyan Hamshachas HaPula Chus Imenu, says the Ramchal, Ve'itzaloyba, Ki HaRotzoin HaElyoy, the divine Rotzoy, Shu Ein Tzoy Baruch Hu, which is infinite, is basically infinite. And therefore the purpose of Tzimtzum was to contract the Rotzoy, to hold back the infinite Rotzoy HaElyoy, in order that God's act should be in the world bounded. And just one more Maram Mokoyim, which is Dav Zayin in the Das Tavunais, Chavav, Klal Chavav, I guess it's the number of Chaim Friedlander. HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have made all of his creation shalem, perfect, complete, that's bestowal of infinite goodness on the world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a world that will be, in fact, not apparently 100% complete and good. He held himself back. There will be chesroinus, lack, deficiency in the creation. And this, in fact, is the tzimtzum. Okay, so in other words, like this. When it comes to the location of the tzimtzum, the Ari and the Ramchal are in perfect accordance. The Goyin and the Ramchal are in perfect agreement. And this makes sense. It makes sense because both the Goyin and the Ramchal understood that God relates to the world only through his Ratzoy. In other words, they both agreed on this irreducible dichotomy, antinomy, between God in and of himself. God is, he relates to the world through his Ratzoy. And therefore the Tzimtzum, which is an act, a description of God, is certainly not a description of God in and of himself, but rather a description of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Ratzoy. So, in principle, one, Ramchal and Goyin both agree. But this is the end of the agreement. Now, I want to make a note to say that this was not the shita, not only of the Baal HaTanya, but of the Nefesh HaChaim. The Nefesh HaChaim, in his shita of Tzimtzum, is a radical departure from the shita Sagoin in Mir Tasham and Nefesh HaChaim towards the end of the Shia. But you should know, do not expect the Nefesh HaChaim to follow his Rebbe Mufik on this point. He's going to make a major concession to Chassidus and to immanence on this very first principle. Okay, now. Principle number two. The Tzimtzum, according to the Goyin, is a dislocation. God relocates himself. Hetek. Now, it is known that there was a dispute, this is discussed at detail, the Leshem and the Biurim, Dafhei, to understand the Tzimtzum Kipshutai or Deloi Kipshutai. In other words, the one can understand the Tzimtzum Pshutai, Kipshutai, literally, and Tzimtzum Deloi Kipshutai, non-literally. In other words, Tzimtzum is not a literal contraction, but a hiding, a concealment. Now, the Shita of the Goyin, undoubtedly, from the Klalim, is that the Goyin understood the Tzimtzum Kipshutai, literally. And if you don't believe me, you want another source, then in fact, the Goyin, in his Perush, his tour de force, his Perush on the Tzafvad Etzneyosa, Perigimel, I put this in the Maram Mekoymus, just to give a little bit of a background, the Tzafvad Etzneyosa is a part of the Zoya. In fact, the Chaim V'Lozhenah, actually, the Goyin understood it as such, some say it's like a Mishnah. The Idr Rabbi Zuta, are like Gemaras on the Saft and Sneilsa. Some say it's the most fundamental Mishnah in the Zohar. The Goyin, on Daf, Chaf Hei, Soif Amud Dalet, and Chaf Vav Amud Aleph, says on the Pasuk of Yikavu Hamayim by Yom HaShlishi, when it says in the Pasuk, once again, the Goyin is learning all the Pesukim in the first Parak of Ma'aseh Bereishis al Pisoid. You will not find this in your art scroll Chumash. It says here, says the Goyin, that which it says in the Pasuk, in the verse, Yikavu Hamayim, that all let all the waters which covered all the land, they were contracted to allow for dry land, Says the Gaon, who tzimtzum, this is the tzimtzum of the or of Tan Hayam El Mokem Echad. El HaYisoid, like it says in Bereishis, he quotes the Tikkun Isaiah. So what happens, this is that tzimtzum. Says the Gaon, what is the tzimtzum? Tzimtzum is the following thing. What happens in the tzimtzum, says the Gaon, we have 10 spheres. Keser, right? And then we have Chokhmah, Bina, Das, let's say. Netzach HaYisoid. Chokhmah, Chesed, Gevurah, Teferet, Netzach HaYisoid. And then Malchus. The bottom part of the spheres, right? Betzuas HaAdam, the part from his waist downward, is called Tan Hayam. Tiferes, Netzach HaYisoid, and Malchus. Says the Gaon, what is tzimtzum? Tzimtzum is when the legs are lifted up. The Tan Hayam of the higher world is lifted up to make room for a lower world. Says the Gaon, when the Pasuk says Yikavu Amayim, that's what's going on. Literally, it's like a Rothko painting. The world, the spiritual world, is lifted up, like maybe this show, this camera. And we're left with a space. There's a literal relocation of the spiritual world. Says the Gaon, Ze Soid HaTzimtzum. Now, of course, the Gaon is speaking about a specific spiritual world. But says the so who says this is speaking about the first creation? So to counter that, the Gaon says, V'chein Tavin Lamaila Lamaila. And you should understand this above and above. Kama Oilamois Koidim HaTzimtzum, before the Tzimtzum. We're not supposed to look before the tzimtzum. We're supposed to understand that the tzimtzum is a literal relocation of the worlds. We're supposed to understand a little bit as a series, an infinite series, from one world to the other world. The bottom of the world is going up. This continues up, 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 ad infinitum till the very first tzimtzum. Now, why is this significant? It's significant because his Talmud Muvik of Chaim Voloshin, it says exactly the opposite. In Perek Zayin, in the Nefesh HaChayim, the second paragraph, Shah Gimel, Daf Kuv Samach Beis in my edition, says Reb Chaim Voloshin, Keneged the Rebbe, Ki Beya Milat Simtsum Khan, says Nefesh HaChayim, the word, the meaning of the word Simtsum, Eino Lishoin Silik Fehetek, is not Silik Fehetek Maklamokoim. Liskan is Lishaber Atzmai, to contract himself into himself. Lahapsi Mokim Podi Chas Vishalim, says Reb Chaim Voloshin. So Reb Chaim Voloshin was Kaifel, rejected the Gaon's concept of tzimtzum, where the Gaon says twice, it's loshen hetek v'siluk, and clearly in the Safra. Now it could possibly be maybe Reb Chaim Voloshin did not see the klolim, but he certainly saw the Safra. How do I know that? He wrote a hakdama to the Safra. It's a very famous hakdama of Chaim Voloshin to the Safra Tzedeus. In fact, much of what we know about the Gaon comes from Chaim Voloshin's hakdama to the Safra. Nonetheless, Reb Chaim Voloshin is explicitly chaylek on the Gaon that the tzimtzum is kaputa, chas v'shalom, he says like that. Now, another raya that in fact the Gaon learned the tzimtzum kaputa is from the Gaon's philosophical and theological nemesis, the Baal HaTanya. I am quoting from the Baal HaTanya and the Shal HaYichud V'Amuna, which appears in the Lubavitcher Tanya, Daf Pei Gimel. It's the second paragraph, four lines from the bottom. Says, Abshneya Zalman from Le'adi, Hinei mikan yesh lahavin shkagas miktsas chachamim be'eneyim. From here we should understand the mistake of some chachamim. It will be apparent that for no question about it, the Baal HaTanya is referring to the Gaon. Hashem yichapi ba'adam, God should atone for their sins. Shishagu v'tol b'yunam b'kisvi arizal, they made a mistake in the ari. V'hivinu inyan atzimtzim amuska sham kipshutai, They understood that Yeri Simtzum should be understood literally. Shakarish Bochu, Silek Atzmay Bahusai, the Kodesh Bochu was removed himself. Chas v'shalom. Ma'olam hazeh. Rak shemashkiach bilamayla b'shachas poatis, etc., etc. So the Baal HaTanya, who is he speaking about? Who would he be attacking if not the guy who put him in Cherem? So, in fact, we see, and we'll speak about this in Mirtz Hashem, that Rav Chaim Volozhiner made a very strong concession to Chassidus. And his machlekes is on the going. Now, in case you think that this is only my reading of Reb Chaim Volozhiner, but we don't hold like that, whoever this mysterious we is all the time, I want to read from the Baal HaLeshen. The Baal HaLeshen, Daf Nun Zayin Amud Dalet, makes a very strong attack on the Leshen. And the Sefer Hadeya. It's Daf Nun Zayin Amud Dalet, page 114, in the Sefer Hadeya of Leshem Shivoy Vachloma. And there, he makes a very strong attack on the Nefesh HaChayim. Now, this is not to mention that in the Chiddush Biurim, the Leshem says explicitly in Daf Hey that he doesn't understand how anyone cannot understand the Tzimtzum Kipshutai. But here, he wants to claim the following thing. Namely, that what? Namely, that what is the consequence of understanding the Tzimtzum Delei Kipshutai? The consequence is that the world, in a certain sense, is not real. It remains divine. God doesn't leave the world entirely. He's immanent in the world. By being immanent in the world, the world remains a little bit divine. We can discuss this in detail, Mirtz Hashem, at the end of the shiur, maybe next week. But says, the Leshem, who understood himself certainly as being the Baal Mamshich of the Goyin, Oid Ra'isi Devom Zoyim Ba'oid. He says, I found very strange things. B'divrei Eze B'kubbalim B'shabadereinu. In certain Mekubalim in our generation, Hamamikim Ba'azberam, who go deeply into understanding things, Sha'ambu, who say, Shekol HaMetzias Kulahu Rak Alder Dimyon Vasog Levad, they claim that all of reality is only an illusion. Ve'ena Metzias Abisas Klal. And really, is that really true? Is that real? The world's an illusion. The world appears to be like this, appears to be like that, but is that really real? Why is that true? Because in the act of Tzimtzum, God didn't change at all. God is now like he was before the creation, which means that God stayed where he is. He just concealed himself. Not like the Goyin says that God left the world. And he says, right, Uchanoida, and he says, Ayeid Sefer Nefesh HaChaim Shar Gimel. He quotes, he puts a finger on the Nefesh HaChaim. You only attack people who are close to you. You know what? He's not going to bother the Baal HaTanya. He's not going to speak about. Nefesh HaChaim is attacking. L'chein Amru. These people claim, and one of them, of course, is the Nefesh HaChaim. Ki be'emes ein shu metziyas acha klal ki kol ha'ilomis hem rak b'dimyon v'asog levad. All the worlds are only b'dimyon and imagination, and the Nefesh HaChaim attacks us, chas v'shalom, this is true, not only will a person reject the reality of the real world, reject the reality of the spiritual world, so this could lead to the most deepest of heresies, etc., etc. In any case, we see very, very clearly that the Goyin Shita was, and this is echoed by the Leshem, that the Kodesh Baruch Hu left the world literally. That means, ladies and gentlemen, Marim v'Rabbeisai, the world is real. It's real, it's not an illusion, it's real. And this, Mirtz Hashem, will play a very, very major role in the Goyin's understanding of the world and its relationship to us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, so second principle, right? The Goyin understands that Tzimtzum Kipshutai as a literal relocation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Therefore what? Therefore, this is in contradistinction to those who came after him, and specifically his own Talmud Muvak. Quotation marks. Now, third principle in the Goyin. The tachlis of the Tzimtzum, according to the Goyin, was to give man free will. And by exercising man's free will, God will reward and punish appropriately, giving honor to God's role as the ruler of the world. Now, this is not the opinion of the Ramchal. The Ramchal says, and we'll actually begin with the Das Tvunes and go to the Ramchal Leklach Pischei Chochma. The Ramchal says, what is the purpose of the creation of the world? Says the Ramchal in Das Tvunes, in the Reb Chaim Friedlander Simen Lamed Dalet, Daf Yud, Yud Aleph, and Yud Beis, says Ramchal, the purpose of the world, Kosh Baruch Hu's creation of the world, is what's called Gilui Yichud Hashem. Meaning, like this, Kosh Baruch Hu is infinite and perfect in all of his attributes. The concept of kindness can be shown directly. Kosh Baruch Hu can be shown to be infinitely kind, infinitely gracious, infinitely just. But unity is different. How can you show that something is one? Says the Ramchal, you can only show the depth, the infinity of God's unity by first showing dichotomy, by showing things which contradict God's unity, and then at the end showing how these two dichotomous things are actually the same thing. So, in other words, the purpose of the Tzimtzum, the purpose of the creation of the world, he doesn't speak about the Tzimtzum yet, is to create a world where there are deficiencies, there are degeneracies, there are lacks, there's evil, and to show at the very end of creation that all of these things are really one, that the evil is really from HaKadosh Baruch Hu too, and is really a concealed good. So in other words, Gilui Yichudai is the tachlis of the creation of the world, that's the Ramchal speaks about in Das Tvunes. Now, the fact is that in the Klach Pischei Chochma, the Ramchal understands this to be the purpose of Tzimtzum. That's what Tzimtzum accomplishes. I'm quoting now from the Ramchal in the Klach Pischei Chochma, Pesach Lamed, Daf Peites in the Chaim Friedlander edition. But Tzimtzum, in the Tzimtzum, says the Ramchal, Hushrash sheyelchu advom lefi hanhogas ha'olam ad hasoif. In other words, in the Tzimtzum was laid the basis for the direction of the world until its final conclusion. Peirush, that is to say, sheyuchlu hakil kulam limotze. God was betzamtzum himself and now in order to allow for evil, for things which are wrong in the world, kilkulim. But at the end, everything will be rectified. And thereby what? The true unity of God will be shown. And based upon this, was created the process. At the very end, everything which is good and evil is going to be shown to be good. In other words, because Baruch Hu at first created a world in which there will be evil. That's called Sitra Acha. Good will overcome the evil. The kilkul itself will become rectified and good. For as yavada, and thereby will be known, hayichud lamisa, God's true unity. Now, one more maramakim, which I want to speak about, is in the Das Tvunais. In Daf Laman Aleph, in the Reb Chaim Friedlander edition, in Simen Mem Gimel, the Neshama asks a question. The last two lines. Adayin yesh li mokoy ma'at l'sheila. He says, I have a question. Lama anu tzrichim loy masha kol oymit al inyan ha-yuchad hazeh? Why do we need yichud? Halay, toiv ha-svar yishayna, sheshamati b'ich b'tchil levorecha. It's better, like he first told me. Shirozah kosh boruch lahitiv ha-tov ha-shleim al-nevroev. Kosh boruch wants to do good to his nevroev. V'rot shizitzorach lazeh shikablu b'schus b'loy b'tztoka. He wanted that people should work to merit God's. Right? This is called the Hamad Kesufa, that people should work in order to you know, to do good and therefore receive God's goodness, and God should just hand it out. And it should be schav einish ba'ilam. Now, by the way, that's the goyin. That's the goyin's tachlis. It should be schav einish ba'ilam. Ukeneged ze sam raka bechir kedei shiyah mokum schav einish. So therefore, because of that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu would create bechir for schav einish. In other words, the Shammah is asking, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu require Gila Yehudai? Just say HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a world to give schav for those who do his will, to einish for those who don't do his will. And corresponding to this would be man's koyach habechira, his free will. Says the Seichel, no. Mem dalet, aval ha-maisa mucha sheyichiru oibel ezgalois. He says, no, we see clearly in Judaism that God's unity is going to be revealed. Ki anachtu goyim haftochais hanaviyim. We see the promises of the prophets. Shevi anum labala kavada, we already brought above the Seifel. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to redeem the Jews in all cases. I feel blessed because even if they don't merit it. God will lose his Yetzirah's evil inclination. They'll be forced to serve God. In other words, basically, this is against free will. In other words, what is the Ramchal saying? Free will is basically a means to an end, but it's not an end to itself. Free will is temporary. It's ephemeral. The purpose of creation is ultimately, right, to turn everything into good, to turn all evil into good, to give schar to everybody. Free will is just a passing event. And says Ramchal, this is muchach, this is clear from all the Nevi'im. We have here a very fundamental dispute between the Goyin and the Ramchal. The Goyin understands that the halacha, God's law, schav einish, free will, is irreducible, is a priori. One never gets beyond the halacha. The halacha is not only a means, but an end to itself. The Ramchal, I hate to say this, is anti-halachic. The Ramchal understands that good and evil is ephemeral. Free choice is ephemeral. The purpose of the halacha is only to direct man to an ultimate unity, an antinomianism, where free will is vacuous and irrelevant, and good and evil are vacuous and irrelevant too. It's very interesting that the Ramchal understands the halacha to really be a means to an end, where the greater end is the revelation of God's ultimate unity, all of evil will turn into good. Bechira is not an end to itself. The halacha is not an end to itself. On this, the goyin is chaylik. Now, the point is, and this is a very, very interesting thing, is that those of you who've learned the Nefesh HaChayim in Shaul Gimel, remember that one of the attacks of the Rav Chaim Volozhiner on the Shita of Tzimtzum of the Baal HaTanya, and by the way, there was a machlokes of the Baal HaTanya and the Nefesh HaChayim, there's no doubt about it, that one of the attacks of the Nefesh HaChayim on the Baal HaTanya was that the Baal HaTanya's concept of immanence, that everything contains the infinite light of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, implied a certain antinomianism, says Rav Chaim Volozhiner. A person can decide he can make brachas in the bathroom as well as make them in the base medrash because there's no less kedusha in one place than another place. In other words, the Rav Chaim Volozhiner saw the tzimtzum of the Baal HaTanya as representing a threat to the halachic system because it posed a philosophy of the total ubiquity of divine presence and antinomianism, which would in fact deny the halachic reality which constituted the mainstay of the entire Jewish faith. And this is in fact Rav Chaim Volozhiner's attack, at least at the outset, on the Baal HaTanya. The attack is not so much an attack, the attack of Rav Chaim Volozhiner is not so much an attack that it constituted paganism. He does mention Avodah Zarah towards the end of Shaul Gimel. The main attack is Rav Chaim Volozhiner understood that in fact the Baal HaTanya's Shita Tzimtzum represented a threat to the halachic system. Very interesting enough, this same machlokes characterized the machlokes of the Gra and the Ramchal. What would the Gaon have said about the Ramchal? In my opinion, he would say the same thing. The Gaon would accuse the Ramchal's Shita of Gili Yehudai as ultimately dismissing the absoluteness of the halakhic system as being something ephemeral, and therefore encouraging a type of antinomianism which would dismantle the entire halakhic system. And that's how for sure the Gaon would have understood the Ramchal. Now, let's go back and summarize the three important points of the Gaon's Shita and Tzimtzum. Okay? Once again, principle number one. According to the Gaon, the Tzimtzum is located in the Kadosh Baruch Hu's Ratzon. Now, what do we accomplish by this? We accomplish by this that there is a maintenance of monotheism. God, right, as in and of himself, does not really God creates the world, but God's creation of the world cannot be understood, but God cannot be understood by man only as a creator. God remains in and of himself, independent of the world, independent of the act of creation. Tzimtzum is the way God reveals himself to us. So in other words, we maintain a notion of God which is in accordance with the Rambam's notion of monotheism, which we spoke about last week. Now, important, and this is now what I want to get back to, Reb Chaim Volozhiner denies this. Reb Chaim Volozhiner does not, even though he does posit two dimensions of God, they're not like the Gaon. Chaim Volozhiner says there are two dimensions of God. The Zoya says God is described by Mamalakol Almin, literally filling up the worlds, and Sefer Kolalim, surrounding the worlds, says the Chaim Volozhiner, two aspects of God. From God's standpoint, everything is God. That's the Mala Kolalim. From man's standpoint, God is transcends the world. That is Sefer Kolalim. But Chaim Volozhiner doesn't say that there exists an aspect of God, other, fully other than all of existence. The God aspect is that everything is God. This room is God, I'm God, you're God, the camera is God, everything is God. Except that we're not supposed to think about that. We relate to the aspect of God that he transcends the world. We'll speak a bit about this next week. But what has Chaim Volozhiner done? He's immanenticized God. I'm curious whether the Gaon would have unleashed his cherem against Chaim Volozhiner too, for this reason. From the Nefesh HaChayim, it gets close to that. So in other words, but here, the Ramchal is in concurrence with the Gaon. The Tzimtzum of the Ari cannot in any way challenge the negative theology of the Rambam, as we mentioned last week. This, however, is discarded in the very next generation, the Balei Tanya and the Nefesh HaChayim. That's principle number one in the Gaon. The maintenance of monotheism despite the Shitas HaTzimtzum. Principle number two, the Gaon understands Tzimtzum to be a literal relocation of God. What is the consequence of this? Well, a consequence of this is that God does not enter into the world. Consequently, the Gaon can acknowledge the reality of the physical world, like Leshem says, the reality of science, the reality of man's free will. Very, very much in the same way as the Rambam and the Menavuchim in several places, which Mitzvah will speak about next week or the week after that, that the Rambam understood that is an attack on the Kalam, that the world has to be understood as a physical thing, as a real thing. The Gaon is the true inheritor of the Rambam's position, Soif Ari. The world is real. Man's free will is real, as the Rambam says. And because of this, according to the Gaon, there, in fact, is not only no objection to doing science, but in fact, science is an expression of the reality of the world, which is so emphasized by the Leshem. The Shita of the Nefesh HaChayim, along the Balei Tanya, was to create a certain illusion to the world, because the ultimate reality of the world is that it's nothing indivisible than God. Because of that, science is suspect. Free will is suspect. In fact, even though the Nefesh HaChayim says that's from the God side, you should know he contradicts himself. At the end of Shah Gimel, he speaks about the concept of Ein Oy Milvadoi. I don't go into it right now. It's a very Hasidic way of making the God's eye view of the world into a reality. Now, so that's the second principle in the Goyim. The third principle of the Goyim is the maintenance of the irreducibility and the absoluteness of the halachic system. Namely, that the purpose of the world is to reveal the absolute dichotomy between good and evil, the irreducibility and eternity of the halacha. And this is in contradistinction to the Rabchal, by understanding the purpose of creation as being Gilui Yehudai, understands that ultimately, with God's increasing revelation of himself in history, the halachic system is going to be dismantled. This, in my opinion, was the legacy of the Ramchal. In fact, it was picked up not only probably by Hasidim, but also too, probably by people like Rav Kook, etc., etc., which Mishnah will speak about another time. These are the three important principles in the Goyim. Now, I want to go here to one final point, which is important. We spoke about last week that the tzimtzum of the Ari, as was understood by Rabbi Ramchal and the Goyim, represented what was called the beginning of immanence. Namely, is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is no longer absolutely other than the world, but in fact relates to man. And there's a dichotomy in the view of God, as we spoke about last week. And in fact, this dichotomy in the view of God represented a very, very important paradigm shift from rationalist medieval Jewish philosophy to post-Ari as interpreted by the Ramchal the Goyim. And this paralleled what we spoke about last week to a little extent. We'll speak about it another time at greater extent. A major shift in Western philosophy from going from the Greek concept of, once again, the otherness of God, the incorporeality of God, to the rational structure of the world, which stressed a certain immanence of the divine. This is what we spoke about last week. And that was step number one, change of paradigm number one. That's the first step, the first immanentization of the eschaton. That's the first immanentization of the eschaton. However, what comes out from this is that, in a certain sense, the Goyim is the last holdout of the old medieval system. In other words, the Goyim maintained both the rationalist and the post-Arizal viewpoints of a God wholly other than the world, in addition to God revealing himself to the world. The two positions of God's otherness and God's revelation was not bequeathed to the Nefesh HaChayim and certainly to the Baal HaTanya. Both the Nefesh HaChayim, not to mention the Baal HaTanya, did not understand that the two aspects of God indicate a God who's totally other than the world. On the contrary, God always relates to the world. The two aspects of God for the Nefesh HaChayim were, is God identical with the world? That's from the God's point of view. Or does God relate to man, right, from afar? But both positions, right, are positions of immanence. One is extreme immanence from God's point of view, and one is quasi-immanence from man's point of view. The question that I want to raise is that this is, in fact, a phenomenon, an intellectual phenomenon, of the end of the 18th century, beginning of the 19th century. Where do we see that in Western thought, somehow immanence takes over and becomes all-inclusive as to even regarding the world to becoming the body of God itself? Now, of course, we all know a famous figure in the history of the world, of Western philosophy. He was a Jew. He was born Baruch Spinoza, the Iskari Benedict. However, in fact is that there's a lot more to speak about here, because the next revolution in Western philosophy was ushered in first by Kant and then by Hegel. And there we see that the immanence becomes more deeply embedded into the reality of the world. So this change of paradigm, which quickly took place after the Goyin, the Nefesh HaChayim of the Baal HaTanya, in fact, actually has its counterpart in Western philosophy, which in Mishnah we will discuss, I'm not sure next time, but the time after that. Now, what I'm going to devote actually next time is we're going to take a little bit of a diversion from philosophy. It's probably, this is, the last two shiurim have been a little bit food for thought, and to use an imminent term. And what we're going to do is I want to really focus a little bit upon the historical circumstances regarding the Goyin's Shitas, namely the Cherem against the Hasidim. I think that any thinker in history, in order to be understood properly, has to be understood not only in terms of what he writes, but the times in which he lived in and his actions, right, within his surroundings. The Cherem against the Hasidim is a watershed in Jewish history. And what we're going to do in Mirtz Hashem next week, I will post the new Marim Mekoymes in Mirtz Hashem. We know very little about the Goyin. There's a lot of Maisim, but cold historical facts, we know very little about the Goyin. I would like to shed a little Mirtz Hashem, a little bit more light on who the Goyin was, what his relationship was to the Lithuanian community, the Machloikis, the famous dispute with the Hasidim, the role the Rav Chaim Volozhiner, played in this Machloikis. This has been the subject of much dispute. And this will throw all of these ideas in Mirtz Hashem in a certain historical context, which will help us understand better as we get to the next part of the Goyin in the Asar Klolim. So I think at this end, I will probably take leave of you. Good afternoon, New York, and good evening, Yerushalayim. Be well.